Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G. Because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters. The more your network matters. The more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network. Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of 3 mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast. Introducing your host from New York, here is Sam Roberts.
Hi, guys. Welcome to Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast. You know, I was struggling with exactly what to do this week. Of course, Katie Linendahl will be joining me on the State of Wrestling. That was not a struggle. That was an easy decision. But this week, earlier this week, I guess it was technically the end of last week, I finally had Virgil in studio. Now, Virgil, as many people know, and I have a history without even knowing each other, as the website LonelyVirgil.net, which has creeped its way through the viral corners of the internet, was indeed started and is maintained by yours truly, Sam Roberts. Yes, I am the creator, founder, curator of LonelyVirgil.net. So I finally got a chance to talk to him. The interview happened. It's on Sirius XM On Demand. It was part of the Sirius XM Sam Roberts Show, which is on every day at noon on XM 103 and Sirius 206. That's Opie Radio. It's also on YouTube. And I was mentioned in a Sports Illustrated article that just came out about Virgil. And I was going to take an abridged version of that interview and play it on the podcast today, as I've done before with, for instance, X-Pac and other wrestlers that have come on the Sirius XM satellite radio show. But as I listened to it, I realized it was not really a wrestling interview at all. I couldn't even find spots to pull out to make it into a wrestling interview. It was fairly adult-themed, humorous, profane, if you will. Not stuff that's typically a part of Sam Roberts' wrestling podcast. So I decided not to give you the Virgil interview this week. If you want to see the Virgil interview, if it sounds like it's your cup of tea, then go over to youtube.com/notsam. You can watch the Virgil interview there and be a part of it and all that. It's just not, I think some of you who listen to the wrestling podcast just do so because you want wrestling. So if you want me and you want Virgil, listen on YouTube. If you want wrestling, then this is the place for you, because I've got a great interview to play for you today. I got it recorded a few weeks back at the New England Fan Fest, the wrestling convention that we were at as a podcast. I got to meet Alex the Pug Porto. Today's podcast is for old school listeners. Alex the Pug Porto did have a wrestling career. He was one of those journeyman wrestlers, if you will. But I didn't really know about him until I was a kid, and he debuted on WWF Superstars around the same time as guys like The Goon and T.L. Hopper and Tracy Smothers as Freddie Joe Floyd and those guys. There was a whole Sal Sincere. There was a whole crop of guys that were brought in with weird kind of not really well thought out characters. Jim Neidhart as Who. They were all brought in as not terribly well thought out characters and kind of just glorified jobbers. They didn't really do much with them, and I never really knew, as a kid especially, if they were being brought in as kind of a new generation, if they were all tryouts, or if this was something different. So I thought it was very cool to get a chance to sit down and talk to Alex the Pug Porto. Now, you know, if you weren't watching at the time that Alex Porto was wrestling, which was the mid-90s in WWF, it's still a really interesting interview. It just gets into the business as it was back then. And I feel like the early to mid-90s is probably the point of the business that we hear the least about, only because it was not history, but it was right before the internet came out. It was also financially one of the weakest times in pro wrestling. That's why Bret Hart's book is so good, because there's so much backstage information and there's so many backstage stories about what wrestling was like in the early to mid 90s. Alex the Pug Porto was there right before the Attitude Era, right before the WWE really took off and started to soar again. Alex the Pug Porto was there. I was intrigued by his story of how he came to be in WWE and his entire career. So, I bring to you today on Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast, our interview this week, Alex the Pug Porto.
And now, the Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast interview.
You never know who you're going to run into at New England Fan Fest. Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast now welcomes Alex the Pug Porto. What's the haps, Pug?
Hey, how are you, man? Been a while. It's great to be back up in the northeast.
Yeah, how many wrestling events do you do these days?
You know, I don't do much anymore. I mean, just the money's not there anymore, and when there is a little bit of money there, they want you to go in and main event, you know, and work 20, 30 minutes with these guys that don't know how to work.
Right.
So the business isn't what it used to be anymore, so it's a shame to say. But, you know, like Cornette said last night in his show, Corny, it's just not it's not there anymore.
So it's just so you're like nowadays, if you were to do a show, they'd want you to go. They'd want you to do a 20-minute match. They want you to kind of work with these guys that haven't really been trained yet.
Exactly. You know, and I tell them, I said, look, okay, first of all, you're not paying a lot of money.
Right.
Which I can understand that. The houses aren't the drizzling shits anymore. So give me a baby face that can go 3, 4, 5 minutes and put me on first, second, or third. Give me my money. Let me get to the house.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? Yeah. If you can't pay me, that's cool.
Yeah.
Let me just give you what this is worth then, as opposed to
You got these promoters out there nowadays. They're on a power trip.
Yeah.
They hold all the talent up till the end of the night. They got them waiting in line till midnight to get their paycheck.
Right.
You know, so, you know, you leave the house at 3 o'clock and drive 3 hours. You know, work a 10-minute match in the ring and get home at 2 in the morning waiting on a paycheck for 50 to 100 bucks. So I just, you know, I'm the hell with it. I'm done with that, you know.
So what are you doing now?
Actually, I work with Southwest Airlines part-time down in Orlando. Really enjoying it a lot. I've got 3 children now, and, you know, I worked full-time for 10 years, 87 through 97. And so just raising kids.
How did you end up in the wrestling business to start with?
Well, you know, it's funny. I met Jim Cornette in the Midnight Express in Shreveport, Louisiana in 86, 87. And I had actually skipped my freshman football practice one day in high school to hang out with Cornette. And we went and ate pizza, you know. And I was just a huge mark for the Midnight Express. I loved Dennis Condrey and Bobby Eaton. And
so that, I mean, the purpose of you skipping football practice was just like, holy shit, Jim Cornette will hang out with me.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm going to do that.
Yeah. I mean, I freaking, you know, I mean, instead of putting my gear on and dressing out for football, I shot across the street from McDonald's, you know, and Cornette was back in waiting on me. He had just driven up, you know, from Baton Rouge, and we talked about it, you know, the week prior. And I just thought, you know, back then I thought, wow, what a cool way to make a living. These guys are having fun, making money.
How aware of the business were you? Like, were you smartened up to the business? Did you understand how it was they were making money and what they were really doing?
Not at all.
And what year was that?
That was in 1986.
Okay, so it wasn't even close to the level of awareness that people have now.
Absolutely not. And, you know, as much as I would try to even get out of Cornette, he was a very, very old-school kayfaber, you know, and that's the way the business was back then. I totally respected that.
Yeah.
You know, he never broke kayfabe on anything. I didn't even know what the word kayfabe meant then, you know. But, you know, I had a lot of respect for him, and I didn't ask dumb questions. You know, maybe I asked one or two, and I didn't get an answer, so I stopped immediately.
That's one of those signals that you know, like, when it's okay to start asking dumb questions, but when somebody just keeps doing it, maybe this isn't the brightest bulb. Maybe this isn't the guy that we want to hang out with.
So I ended up training in Bossier City, Louisiana, mm-hmm. With a guy named Jim Starr, which is one of the original hangmen out of St. Louis territory back in the 70s, and great worker, I actually got my first break in Dallas, Texas with Skandar Akbar. I showed him a couple of things, and he said, well, you know, I might have some TV for you. And so I had my first match in 87 in Dallas with World Class.
How did you end up? You got to the WWF at the time, WWE now, in kind of this weird time where it was like a new superstar debuting each week on Superstars pretty much. Like, let's throw T.L. Hopper at you. Let's throw, you know, Jim Neidhart in a mask at you. let's throw this guy Alex the Pug Porto at you. And at first, like, I'm watching this, I'm going, I don't understand the pug. I'm like, the dog? Like, and, you know, you come out in the singlet, and as a kid, I'm going, like, I don't understand. How did you end up in WWF, and how did you end up as the pug?
Well, it's funny, you know, they had some shows out in Texas, and I worked with Dustin one night, and had a little tryout match, and they were happy with it, and before I know it, they were like, look, we're interested in you. We'll give you a ring, and we're going to fly you in and bring you to Titan Towers. And so, funny thing is, everybody got this phone call, but nobody knew it, and everybody flies into New York, and so it's Bill Irwin,
uh-huh.
Tom Brandy,
right.
Tracy Smothers, Tony Anthony,
right,
and Jim Neidhart, and me.
I know, and normally, and you'd sit there when there's six guys, you're like, not all of us are going to make it, but all of you were there to get repackaged, I guess.
Exactly, and none of us knew it, and we're all in this limo going to Titan Towers.
And is that because you're just like, okay, we got to just get some workhorses that we know can work, we're going to repackage them, and these are the guys that we're going to kind of...
You hit it right on the money, brother, because let me tell you something. They were booking guys for TV that knew how to work, but they didn't look like workers. They didn't have the right gear, you know, didn't have muscles, didn't have a, you know, no tan. So they were like, you know what, let's bring in our own crew of guys that know how to work. Let's put some gimmicks on them.
Right.
And we'll have them put our guys over on Raw, and then on Superstars, we'll have them go over.
Right, so it's almost like rethinking what you'd use like a jobber for. Like instead of bringing in job guys, we're going to actually build some talent.
Right.
We're going to put the established guys over on Raw with them, but on Superstars actually give people a reason that, oh, no, that's not, That's the pug. I know him from Superstars.
Right. And, you know, I mean, it was the most exposure I'd ever gotten in my career.
Yeah.
You know, after working 10 years in Dallas and Japan, you know, I went to Japan several times in the early 90s, I wanted much more at the end. I mean, I really wanted, I mean, everybody wants to be Austin or Rock or Taker, you know. But I did want a much longer run. That's not really what I thought that they had in mind for me, but I took it, you know, for what it was. I did some good international tours. Had a great time, worked with, you know, Jim Neidhart down in Miami on some house shows, worked with Phil LaFon, you know, Doug Furness, you know, worked with Dustin a lot of times, worked with Owen Hart, Bulldog, you know, Hunter, worked with the Bradshaw, and worked with JBL in the Garden. So, you know, it created a lot of good memories.
Why did they want to put gimmicks on everybody? Like, why wouldn't Tracy Smothers come in as Tracy Smothers as opposed to Freddie Joe Floyd, I think is what his name is. Why did they, like, it seems like an extra step that it's like, if your purpose is to come in, get established a little bit, but put their guys over, why go the extra step of creating this sort of brand or whatever it is?
You know, it's a strange question, it really is, and I've done several podcasts, I explained it. But, you know, when they brought us into Titan Towers, they brought us at the last of the, you know, we met, you know, Vince, and they gave us a few, you know, gimmicks and stuff. And we went into Creations, and they asked, hey, what have you done? I said, well, you know, I was a Dirty White Boys in Tennessee with Tony Anthony in 89. You know, I was the Beach Bully in Dallas, Texas, you know, for Global. I went over to Japan just as Alex Porto. And, you know, I was out in Puerto Rico. I had the, you know, light heavyweight strap out there from Ricky Santana, 91. Well, the last thing I told them, I said, well, you know, I was an amateur wrestling in high, you know, I was an amateur wrestler in high school. And believe it or not, a week later they called me, Bruce Pritchard called me and said, hey, you're going to be an amateur wrestler. You just came out of college. You don't know a lot about the business. And I was like, okay. And he said, we're either going to call you the Pug or the Pit Bull. And Pit Bull apparently was, you know, being used at the time in Atlanta with Craig Pittman.
Uh-huh.
So they went with the Pug, and that's how the Pug came about, you know.
Because the Pit Bull was taken.
That's
so
right.
So the next best option is a Pug.
Yeah.
And it is, I mean, but that is, wrestling was so different back then. Because, like, for me, you know, what's that, 94, 95?
96, 97.
That was 96.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're already, what, 8-9 years into your career at that point.
Right. I started at 20.
For me,
yeah, I started,
I'm 12, 13 years old. It's the first time I'd ever seen Alex Porto. That's all I know. So I'm like, okay, yeah, this is just some guy fresh out of college.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
And that is, I think, the reason why they wanted to repackage guys, because they knew that we had established names in other areas.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that was their idea of saying, okay, well, let's bring in a guy that's got experience, but let's put something on him new that people haven't seen. and try to see how it flies.
Was it weird when they gave you that call? Did you think to yourself, like, after everything we talked about, that just kind of anecdote about also I was a high school wrestler, but here's everything I've done. Like, that's the one amateur thing. That's the one thing you locked on to, and, like, everything else is out the window. It's just that one little detail that just gets locked on.
That was the very last thing I thought they would ever come up with.
Yeah.
And let me tell you something. I was what they had in mind for Kurt Angle, but I wasn't Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle was a gold medalist.
Right.
You know, and after the Pug came in, you know, outside, there had really never been anything like that other than Bob Backlund.
Right.
You know, they said, you know what? Let's dig a little deeper. Let's get an Olympic champion. Let's bring in a guy named Kurt Angle. It has a gold medalist, and that's when they brought in Kurt. You know, and I think that they saw a lot in me of what they really wanted. You know, beyond me.
And they were also smart enough to take the character once Kurt came in and kind of give him this heel twist that kind of fit more with the times than just this, like, oh, you know, babyface collegiate guy.
Right. You know, Kurt had a name. I mean, he's all over the world. You know, he's a gold medalist. So, you know, and they probably threw a lot more money on him than me, you know, whatever. But, I think that, you know, I inspired them to go that route with Kurt Angle.
So is there any question as to why, like, okay, you know, you're repackaging Alex Porto because he's been elsewhere, but people may not know. Even, you know, T.L. Hopper, okay, Bill Irwin, okay, we'll repackage that. But why repackage Jim Neidhart?
Yeah,
he's WWF guy.
Right.
Like, yeah, the Anvil is a known entity, and he even with a mask on, he looks like the Anvil.
Right, and nobody never understood that. And, of course, none of the boys did either because he looked like Jim Neidhart under the hood, you know? It's like Dusty Rhodes, whatever, the Midnight Rider,
right,
you know, when he was doing that. You know? But, that was funny. It's
strange. How did so when this new influx of guys come in, when all six of you or however many it was come in and kind of enter all at once, how did the rest of the locker room respond?
Well, you know what? Other than us, all the other guys were big stars.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew what we were there for.
Okay, so there was no kind of,
no,
they're here to take our spot. It was just like,
exactly,
they just brought these guys in to make us look better.
And, you know, a lot of guys said, well, how'd you fit in politically back there? Well, I didn't have to.
Right.
I knew my position, you know. I mean, it wasn't important to be in the clique because, you know, our clique was Freddie Joe Floyd,
yeah,
Bill Irwin, T.L. Hopper.
Right.
You know. Tracy Smothers, Alex Porto, and Tom Brandy.
None of you were there to main event WrestleMania. That's not why you're there.
That's right. You know, and I think the most guy out of all of us probably got more work was Tom Brandy.
Well, yeah, and they ended up repackaging and trying. And
well, he was in the Philadelphia area, mm-hmm, you know, and, you know, they ran a lot more up here. And they actually used him for Survivor Series at the Garden.
Right.
In 97. So, you know, he got more, you know, and he got some good time on TV with Taker. And, you know, my matches were, you know, hey, you got 6 minutes with Mankind, just get with Mankind on the finish. You know, get with Triple H, you got about 4 minutes with Hunter.
Yeah.
You know, and then Hunter would come up and say, hey, Alex, you know, they put the strap on me last night. I need to come out a little strong tonight. I mean, but, you know, and then on Tuesday nights, I would have an enhancement guy, and then I'd had that same opportunity. So,
right. So you didn't get frustrated with your role in the company because it was kind of made clear to you from the beginning? Or did you get frustrated?
Well, it wasn't made clear at the beginning.
When
they called me and said, hey, we're going to call you the Pug, I had no idea the Pug was coming in to be a glorified jobber.
Right. You thought, like, if you're going to go so far as to call me something,
yeah,
if you're going to make me gear that has my name on it and all this stuff,
right,
that's something, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's something that you're going to do something with.
And I had been a heel my whole 10-year career before I got there.
Uh-huh.
And Jerry Briscoe was pretty much my agent, you know, kind of in charge of me. And he said, well, you're going to be a babyface. And then that really threw a wrench on everything. And I was like, I've never done that.
Yeah.
But that's what they wanted, you know.
And is that a case of the guys there not really knowing what your strengths were? Because it would seem like, you know, okay, we got this guy and we can package him as an amateur wrestler, but, you know, we can also look at what he's done in the past and see where his strengths are and kind of capitalize on that. Like when they brought in, you know, Matt Bourne to be Doink, like, yeah, it's a totally departure, but we're going to make him a heel because we know he can be a good heel and we can use that.
Well, you know, I mean, that's from one extreme to another, Alex Porto to Matt Bourne. Matt Bourne had been an established worker for many years.
Uh-huh.
You know, Alex Porto, yes, was a solid worker in Dallas and Japan, you know, with global and world class. But I don't think, even though if they knew that, I don't think that they had any interest in that. They knew what they needed us for.
Yeah.
They knew that we could go in there and make those guys look good. They knew that we looked like workers. They knew that we could work.
So when did that reality sit in that you're like, oh, this is what I'm here for?
Yeah, after about the first few Raws, it just, you know, it's like, okay, this is what we're here for.
Right.
You know.
And that must have been, that had to have been a weird thing, and it must have taken you a few weeks to figure out, because before then, it wasn't enhancement workers were not going over on other enhancement workers and then coming in. Like, that process didn't really happen before you guys.
No, it didn't.
You see it a little more nowadays. Like, you don't really see true job guys. You see more guys, like, that would have fit in with the Alex Portos, Freddie Joe Floyds of the world. And maybe that's just a concept they were starting to test out. But before then, that must have been a kind of... You wouldn't have even thought that you were brought in for that because it wasn't happening.
No. And, you know, at the time, it was very creative. You know, it was something that was needed.
Yeah.
I just didn't know it was going to be me.
Right, right.
You know, and Tony Anthony, fantastic worker for many years. Bill Irwin, great freaking worker for many years, you know. And
how did those guys feel about it?
You know, I think that those guys had such strong runs in the previous years.
They were ready to take it easy.
It didn't matter to them. They were there. You know, I mean, it was an easy paycheck, you know. And, you know, to me, I was 24 years old, 25 years old. You know, I was really just ready to start off and, you know, really take off another 10 years.
So you started wrestling when?
When I was 17.
Wow.
Yeah, in 87, I had my first match.
Wow, and you were 17 years old.
Yes.
So you were... So you're this guy who's got this kind of hardened, somewhat veteran mentality because you've been wrestling for years, but you're 25.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, and so it was different, you know. I mean, and you know, yes, it was a little disappointing, but at the same time, you know, I talked to many guys in Texas that I, you know, broke into the business with over the years, and they're like, man, you're on the roster. Who cares?
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter.
But this, at the same time, you know, aside from Tom Brandy, you run down that list, and those are not guys that are 25 years old. Those are guys, like you said, that have had runs, that have, you know, tasted success. And it's like, that must have been a tough pill to swallow. It's like, okay, at that age is when you're supposed to be getting the break. And it's like, you think it's the break, but then somehow you get coupled in with these guys who just missed it. Or you know what I mean? Like, who've done it.
Yeah, and you know what? Look, I'm a fantastic worker. I really am. And not pat myself on the back, but I don't have a lot of charisma. I was never really good on the mic. I wasn't a Jericho. I wasn't a Austin. You know, I wasn't a Christian. And those guys, they were just as good on the mic as they were in their ring.
So when you see guys like that, when it's 96, and you see the Austins and the Michaels and the these guys that are all obviously starting to come up, even Rocky, like you said, at Survivor Series, starting to come up, are you looking at them like, whoa, like this is a whole other thing? The way these guys handle, like, this is taking the business in a totally other direction.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, I could do very, very strong interviews. Mm-hmm. But to go out there and go, you know, live on Raw with a mic and do stuff like, you know, Jericho or Cena or, you know, stuff like that, I didn't have that kind of charisma. You know?
Right, right.
And that was right when the business was really taking off to that.
Yeah. So how do you find out that WWE is done with their experiment, that they're kind of... The Freddie Joe Floyds and the Alex the Pug Portos are going to start disappearing?
Well, you know, they just kind of... We were on a nightly deal there. I mean, yeah, we signed for, you know, until they were done with us.
Right.
And
but it wasn't like a guaranteed thing. It was just like, come in, we'll pay you, and that's it.
Yeah, it was a nightly, you know.
Yeah.
And there would be times where they would book me, and then they would call me and say, hey, you know, we're shaving numbers on this run, you know, you're going to be off. And you know, I kind of got a little hot about it, you know, because, I mean, you know, I wanted to work, you know.
So when you have, and when you have that deal, you can't work other places.
No, I couldn't. And I had expenses, too.
Right.
You know, I mean, I had a car, I had a cell phone, I had car insurance, groceries.
Sure. I mean, this is your gig. It's like, but you got to pay me.
Right.
Like, you know, you got to book me.
And then at the last, Bruce Pritchard called me. He said, hey, we're going to be in Birmingham. You know, we could really use you. Well, you know, I hated to say it, but use me for what? For what you've been using me for?
Right.
I mean, we already know this is kind of fading out. Birmingham's, you know, 600 miles from my house. You know, you want me to drive? You know, and look, I'm not trying to say I was too good for it, but for what they had us in there for, and it was kind of fading out at the time.
Right. So
I was like, you know, in my head, I was like, Bruce, I think this is over. You know?
Yeah.
And you know, we just all kind of diminished, you know, as you well know. But like I said, I wasn't too good to do it. But for the position that I had,
yeah
I was like, you know.
Are you going to drive 600 miles to go?
Yeah, to go 4 minutes.
Do a 4 minute squash. And then not be used again. It's one thing if they're going to be like, okay, you make this drive, we're going to start using you. But it's like, if you know it's coming to an end anyway.
Yeah, and that's when WCW is really kicking Vince's butt.
Right.
The NWO. And to be honest with you, whenever I left there, I was in Orlando when WCW was doing their TV tapings down there. And when I left Vince and went down there and worked some matches, I had some of my strongest matches after the Pug.
Mm-hmm.
Fit Finley, you know, Hugh Morris, you know, Billy Kidman, Alex Wright, you know, Super Calo. I had some good solid matches down there. I could actually get in there and work, you know.
And was that the thing where WCW was just like, oh, you're off WWE TV. Come on board. We'll pay you.
They knew I could work.
Yeah.
They knew I lived in Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew I was done up there, you know. And, yes, I was trying to get a spot with them, but nothing never really popped, you know.
Right. But you were working with the cruiserweights mainly.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah.
And that was also kind of a revolutionary change in the business because you didn't have matches like that on TV. And you weren't – a guy like you wasn't given – 10 minutes, 12 minutes, whatever it was, to work with a guy like Super Calo before they started doing that stuff on Nitro.
Right. And, you know, to go a step further, I mean, Vince's TV time was so critiqued. I mean, it was like, okay, you got 6 minutes with Farouk. Bam. I mean, that's all it was.
And it's a hard six.
Yeah. And then when you go to WCW, hey, you know, you're with Fit Finley. You guys got about 8 or 10. Just listen to Fit. You know, and we were a lot more lenient in there, you know.
Yeah.
And I could be myself in there, you know, and I could open up. And, you know, I wasn't afraid. You know, it was a little intimidating to cut off Ron Simmons.
Sure.
And get freaking leveled, you know. It was a little intimidating working with Mankind, you know. And Hunter.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. It really was. Because, you know, I was 25, and those guys had been there they were established guys, you know.
Yeah.
But whenever I went to WCW and I got out of there, you know, I was working with Billy Kidman, Alex Wright. You know, those guys, those were just average good workers.
And even when you were in WCW, did you feel like you were more established? Just being on WWE TV had established you to a point that when your name is introduced as Alex Porteau, the American fans are on a national level are being like, oh, yeah, I know who that is.
Right, and they did, you know. And the sad part is that I actually got to work in WCW, you know. They allowed me to go in there and work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? With Vince, it was, you know, this is what you're going to do, you know, and that's what I did.
And is there any room when that scenario comes up for somebody on your level to go to Vince and say, Vince, like, I don't know if you know me, but let me introduce myself, and this is what I'm capable of?
It's funny you say that because years later, I should have done that.
Yeah.
You know, or years later now. I think
in hindsight, right.
Exactly. Because Booker T did that same very thing. When he was picked up, you know, with WCW, he went in to Vince and said, look, if I do what these agents are telling me, I'm gonna end up losing my job here. You know, and Vince said, Booker, go do your thing. You know, but at the same time, knowing that I came in there with those other five guys and what we were used for, who was I to go in there and say that to Vince?
And it's a risk, too, because if you're not necessarily a priority, Vince is going to do two things. He's one of two things. He's going to either say what he said to Booker, go out and do your thing, or he's going to say, you know, who the fuck do you think you are, and you've got heat with the agents now.
Exactly.
And so you got to kind of make your choice right there.
Yeah, it was very intimidating there. It really was.
It was.
You know, you just keep your mouth shut, you know, and do what you were told. You know?
Was there a worry at that time? Because that was when WWE was really in trouble financially.
Yeah.
Like that was when, like you said, like even towards the end of your run, when Nitro was getting even bigger. But even before that, I mean, they weren't doing the ratings, they weren't doing the houses. Like it was, they were not making the money that they once made. Was there a vibe of, like, oh, I don't know what we're gonna do here?
I think so, but you know, Vince has always pulled through the valley, you know, so to speak. And I think that was probably, you know, one of the lowest times they'd hit.
Right yeah.
There. Because, you know, with Brett going to WCW and Hogan there and Piper, I mean, they couldn't touch that show for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and WCW, they were just throwing money out the window at the time. They had, you know, Goldberg and, I mean, so they had a lot of serious talent in there, you know. And the only top guys that were with Vince were still Austin, The Rock, and Taker, and Shawn Michaels,
right.
You know, which were strong names. But they weren't, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Rock and Austin still hadn't hit that peak.
Yeah.
Michaels and Taker had been there for a long time, so it's like, what's that sort of thing?
What's grabbing it? Well,
right.
What's grabbing it was Nitro.
Right.
You know, NWO, you know, who's coming out next week, you know, and, you know, because they kept adding guys to the roster,
right.
You know.
And then after, did you ever pitch for yourself to join the NWO since you had done time on WWE TV?
No, because I think that had actually faded out once I went down there.
Oh, okay. After you left WCW, do you kind of start watching the show? Because wrestling is just getting hotter and hotter and figuring out, you know, if I was there, I could be doing this or I could be doing that. Or are you kind of over it by then?
You know, I'm over it. I really am. I mean, you know, I am content with what I did.
Yeah.
You know, I've been in the ring with a ton of guys and... You know, Sting, Luger, the Road Warriors, the Midnight Express, the Freebirds, you know, carrying Kevin Von Erich, Al Perez, Jimmy Jack Funk, Hunter, Bradshaw, Farouk, you know, the list goes on. So I don't – the only thing I regret about the business is jumping in at 17 years old at being a junior in high school, senior in high school, and not getting a good education like a lot of these guys are doing nowadays.
Right.
You know.
Not having that thing to fall back on.
Exactly. So –
yeah, and that's got to also make it tougher. Like, you realize, am I going to go to Vince? Because if he fires me, what do I got? Like, I started this when I was 17.
Yeah.
I got to start all over again now and figure out the next thing, and I have no idea what that is. And I'm sure on some level Vince knows which guys have nothing to fall back on,
sure.
Which guys have something
to
fall
doubt.
Back on.
Yeah.
You were talking about, you know, when you were in WCW getting a chance to work and how refreshing that was and everything. Do you also, though, think on some level that it hurts them not having a micromanager like Vince, that there's not this one guy who's directing exactly what to do, in the sense that, okay, you know, I know who the boss is. Like, there is something to knowing who the boss is, and whether I agree with him or not, that's what we're doing, versus, you know, letting the boys do what the boys do. Or do you think it is better to just let the boys do what the boys do?
Well, at the time, Eric Bischoff was the booker.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, never really heard from Eric, never really saw Eric, you know, but, you know, Terry Taylor was an agent, Arn Anderson,
mm-hmm.
You know, and I pretty much just kind of, you know, just like Vince was the head guy there, you know, but Jerry Jarrett, and Pat Patterson, and you know, George Animal Steel, Tony Garea,
mm-hmm.
Those were agents back then, you know, and in a production meeting, those guys are all assigned 3 or 4 matches, and those guys are to get those put together. Well, it was kind of the same thing at WCW. You know, Terry Taylor was assigned to 3 or 4 matches. Arn had a few matches, you know, and whoever the other agents were. So, but it's, you know, I think that those agents knew that I could work.
Right.
Although I didn't show that with WWF. They knew it previous to that.
Right, they knew who you were.
So they knew, you know, I worked one night with Dean Malenko. And I said, "Hey, Dean, what do you want to do?" He said, "I'll just go out there. I, you know how to work, you know."
That's gotta feel good.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know,
it's also gotta give you a certain bit of confidence, like when you don't have somebody micromanaging you and just being like, "No, you know what you're doing. We got it. We'll go out there and do it." That's gotta refill your level of confidence. Like, you know what? I am a good worker. I don't need to be doing 4-minute squash matches. I do know what I'm doing.
And that's what I was used to for 10 years before I went to Vince.
Right.
Was, hey, you know, you've got about 12 minutes with Coco Beware. You've got about 10 minutes with Chris Adams. You know, you've got, you know, 6 or 8 minutes with, you know, whoever it was, you know. And, you know, I could go out there and do my own thing, tell a story. But with Vince, it was very, very, I mean, it was cut to the chase. This is what we, you know, this is what you're here for. This is what you're here to do. We don't need, you know, don't say anything about it. You know,
yeah.
They didn't say that, but you could tell that was the way the office was coming across.
When you go to a convention like this and you meet fans, they come up to you and get autographs and all this stuff, are you surprised, based on everything your career has been and everything you've done, are you surprised how many people remember the Pug?
Believe it or not, I am.
Yeah.
And most people that come up to me today, right now, remember me from the old ESPN classics, the Beach Bully.
That's what they, oh, because ESPN brings it back.
Yep.
And now, and I guess that's also when you get to display a little more personality, have a little longer matches. So that's what people, you find more know you for now.
Right.
The Beach Bully.
Because they, that's where Booker T and I started, you know.
Yeah.
In Global, and Ahmed Johnson and Bradshaw, you know. And so they remember those times. You know, that's back when the business was, you know, good business.
Uh-huh.
You know? And not knocking it too much now, but just not the same anymore.
Well, you don't have the territories now. You got a big company.
And NXT.
And NXT.
Yeah.
Other than that, you got some indie shows and that's it.
Yeah.
There is no, you know, there is no other thing. I mean, you know, there's TNA, but who knows how long that's even going to be around for.
Yeah, and, you know, with ESPN re-air and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it just, it throws out a lot of exposure, and, you know.
And I think a lot of people, too, because I remember watching Global coming home from school. It'd be on at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon on ESPN, and I would watch it every day I came home from school. But beyond that, and I think that that only lasted, you know, a couple years, people kind of forgot that there was this other thing going on. At the same time, there's WWE, there was WCW, but there was this other little thing on ESPN, and there's some really good wrestling. And it goes to show that you look at these rosters, and all of them came through Global.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, the number of people that came through the same place that you came through is pretty astounding. And that is the way you watch WWE TV today, and you look at all the top guys being Ring of Honor guys. 15 years ago, you watch WWE TV, and it's like a lot of these guys are Global guys that came up. Same with WCW, really.
No doubt. And the big thing back then was ESPN was worldwide.
Yeah.
You know, Vince didn't have worldwide at the time. Neither did WCW.
Yeah.
You know, and they didn't have, you know, internet back then where you just, you know, hit WCW.com or WWE.com and just watch, you know. So, I mean, at ESPN TV was very, very strong.
Yeah, and I mean, and like I said, the fact that it was on every day at one point.
Yeah.
And it was like, that was the thing. Me and my buddies would go home and you'd discover it. You'd go, oh, do you know there's other wrestling on TV? And it's like, what? For like a little kid wrestling fan. You mean when you come home from school, there's wrestling on TV?
Yeah, yeah.
And you turn it on every day, and you watch The Patriot and the Lightning Kid and everything. It was outstanding. So is that, do you like being remembered for that? Is that what you'd like to be, your kind of legacy in wrestling?
Well, unfortunately, yes. I mean, I was very, very content with going to WWE. That was the highlight of my life.
Sure.
You know, I mean.
And if you had never gone at all, that would have been in your head. Like, you don't want to not have that experience as a wrestler of never having been there.
Yeah, it's a love-hate thing.
Right.
I'm content that I made it with WWE. If I would have never made it with WWE, I felt like I probably wouldn't have reached my goal.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? However, that I...
wrestling fans, Eric Bischoff, question and answer.
I was able to wrap up my career there. It was a valid position in the business.
Did you know that, like, as you entered your career in WWE and you went to WCW for a little bit, did you know your career was wrapping up? Because you were a young guy. You know, did you have any inclination that, yeah, I'm kind of done it all, I'm kind of done with this?
Well, to be honest with you, I mean, I was young, you know, and after the Pug, I went down there busting my butt in WCW, working hard with all these guys, and I thought, well, maybe these guys will pick me up.
Right.
And use, you know, but it just didn't happen, you know. And
so at that point you go, you know, am I going to keep fishing or?
Well, I had a daughter. She was, you know, just a year old in 97, and I thought, you know what, it's been a great 10 years. I love the business. I've done all I can in it. You know? I've hit almost every promotion, worked with so many top talents, and I was content with walking away and saying, hey, you know what? I gave it my all, you know? And I said, now I need to be a dad. You know, I can't be a dad and be on the road. I've known too many guys that made a ton of money but don't know their children.
Right.
You know, and that I always that really stuck out to me whenever I'd hear guys say that, you know. I was talking to Earthquake one night down at wrestling school in Orlando when he was alive. He's like, you know what, Alex? My daughter's 17. We sit in the living room, and I don't even know her.
Wow.
You know, he said I watched her grow up in pictures.
Yeah.
And that hit me. that hit me kind of hard, you know, yeah. because my daughter was 10 weeks early. She was 3 pounds. Didn't know if she was going to make it or not. She did make it. She's 18 now.
Amazing.
And I've been there every day of her life,
yeah.
you know. So, you know, and a lot of guys, they, you know, wonder, why'd you get out? You know, what happened? Well, you know, I mean, it wasn't really my choice. I mean, it kind of was, but it wasn't. I mean, I had gone with Vince. I did what I could there. WCW had seen me as strong as I could be.
Right. And when are you going to, like, work the indies and try to, like, you did that. You did that, too. You can't go, kind of tough to go backwards.
Yeah.
You got to make that, that's kind of a choice you make. You're like, if I'm going to continue on in this, I got to go backwards. Or,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
you got a kid and you got to move on with life.
Yeah, and I had 2 boys since then, so I've got 3 beautiful children.
What are they, do they know about your wrestling career? Because even the 18-year-old would be too young to really to
well,
have been around.
Well, no, they really don't other than, you know, the ESPN Classics coming on.
So when you go to a convention like this, and you're like, no, yeah, they're flying me out, and a bunch of fans are going to be asking for my autograph. Or they're like, what are you talking about, Dad? Nobody cares.
Right.
Nobody. What do you mean?
Well, and they don't see that superstar dad because I'm just a dad at home. I'm
right.
not. I'm not the pug, you know.
Of course.
You know, I'm not.
You don't walk around
bully.
In the singlet.
Yeah. And so it's you know they're like, what do you mean? You know, we don't know that guy. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And you pull out the WWE encyclopedia and you go, that's your dad.
Right.
Well, listen. I'm glad you stopped by. I'm glad to talk to you because it's one of those things. I think a lot of people kind of remember you, whether it's through the ESPN Classics or even just people that were raised on WWF. It's one of, like, your group of guys, regardless of what you were used for, were pushed pretty heavily for us kids that were watching Saturday Morning Superstars. You know what I mean? You guys were on TV all the time. It was like, hey, next week we got this superstar debuting.
Right.
We got this superstar. So I think it is one of those things that people wonder, like, what was the story with that?
Yeah.
So I'm glad you had the time to hang out here.
Hey, appreciate you very much, man. It was an honor, and a lot of great talent up here in Providence, and including Goldberg and Bischoff and
yeah.
Cornette, and you know all the divas that are here, and
a lot of divas.
Greg Valentine, Jimmy Snuka. This has been a great turnout.
Yeah. Do you have any? Are you on Twitter or anything like that? Or
yeah, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. I'm on all of them.
Where can they get you at?
Just Alex Porto.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, get it, Alex Porto, and thanks for being on the podcast, man.
Hey, sounds good, man. Have a great day.
You too.
All right, see you, man.
Here is Sam Roberts.
Alex the Pug Porto. So if you ever wanted to know what happened to him, that's what happened to him. He's doing very well. He's a very nice guy. He's a sweetheart. It's hot in my apartment right now. I have to turn off the AC so I can do this. I want you to know that. I just want you to know I've sacrificed for you. So in exchange, you can sacrifice a little bit for me. And by that, I mean put some of your money towards a good cause. Primetime Sam Roberts. Go to prowrestlingtees.com/Sam Roberts and get yourself a Sam Roberts t-shirt. You can get a Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast t-shirt. You can get a Not Sam Mode t-shirt. It's the Divas Revolution. Represent your favorite diva, yours truly, Sam Roberts, with this Not Sam Mode t-shirt. You can get the official Not Sam shirt. You can get a What's the Hap shirt. They're all available right now at prowrestlingtees.com/Sam Roberts. So get them, enjoy them, and it all helps the podcast. You know what I mean? Not only does it help the podcast financially, but just getting the word out there. Showing up on TV with one of these t-shirts. Going to a live event with one of these t-shirts. Walking around your hometown. Walking around your house. Maybe your wife will start listening to the podcast. That's 2 downloads instead of 1. That's huge. That's double, okay? If you could double your household downloads, then you can consider yourself a good person. If not, well, then I'm not sure about you. I'm not sure. State of wrestling time. So much going on. A lot to get into. Katie Linendahl is joining me on the State of Wrestling. Why don't we go for it, huh? Here it is.
It's now time for this week's State of Wrestling.
Here we are again. Welcome to the State of Wrestling with yours truly, Sam Roberts, as always on Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast. There's so much going on in the world of wrestling, and it's called Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast. I like to think that we cover all pro wrestling. Maybe we don't do such a good job of, like, New Japan, because we're not in Japan, we're in America. But I'd like to talk about Impact. I'd like to talk about Ring of Honor. I'd like to talk about the indies. I'd like to talk about PWG. But there's so much going on in WWE right now that tends to dominate the State of Wrestling. They are the industry standard, after all. Luckily, it's not just me here today. Here with me, my partner in crime. We get her this week. It's not always a guarantee. Visionary and genius, Katie Linendahl is here. Now, Katie has squeezed us in because she's getting ready to go help women find jobs and create and shrink the gender equality gap in countries like Malaysia, the Philippines, and even you're going to be in Hong Kong as well. That's like next week, right?
I think it's in a few days. I don't have a flight yet, but...
Okay. But here, I got you here now.
It's peanut butter jelly time. Peanut butter jelly.
Right.
Peanut butter jelly was stinging a baseball bat.
That's right. Very good. Way to relate it.
I did that on the fly.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
That's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
How long is the flight to Hong Kong?
I honestly don't have a flight. I couldn't tell you how long it is,
but
I'll be gone in a few days. That's just how I run my life, okay?
Well, then here's what we're going to do.
It's going to be an amazing adventure, and these are stories that I live for.
Yeah. I mean, it's incredible.
Passionate stories.
It's incredible. And
actually,
and
the Philippines, they got bombed by the super typhoon. Now they're, like, rebuilding, and they're...
I hope there's no typhoons while you're there.
It's an economic rebuild.
Yes. We'll help them out with that. Throw them a few bucks.
I go from, like, you know, a tsunami to talking about how I'm really excited to be chatting with everyone... on your the new fans from the podcast
right.
on Twitter.
You go from talking about a tsunami to talking about the natural disasters.
To how...
How do you like that? You see what I just did there? You see that they'd like the tag team, you see?
I'm always thinking.
That's right.
To how Kevin Owens' armpit and Finn Balor's Legos is following me on Twitter.
Well, it's like no matter how much...
It's a very...
No matter how big of a difference you make on the planet...
Very extreme differences.
Yeah, there's going to... My people will always be there as well.
Definitely.
Like, your people are the ones that are like, oh, my God, I can't believe what an impact you're making on the planet. And I've gained so much from as a person and blah, blah, blah. And my people are like, New Day sucks. Am I right, at Katie Linendahl? Yeah, I guess you're right. Well, Katie, I mean, we've had a really good, I think, episode of Raw this week. We are coming off of the Battleground pay-per-view. Another fairly lousy episode of Tough Enough. Where do we begin?
Wow. Overwhelming.
Overwhelming indeed.
I mean, especially on the Divas side. I know you're still freaking out about it.
I mean, don't get me... We can't do another...
so much to cover.
We can't do another fully Divas podcast.
No, people would hate us.
I will say this.
People already hate you. I'm just hanging on by a string.
Why'd you have to do it?
Saying.
Why'd you have to do it? Well, I will say this. The pay-per-view, Battleground... It was a good show, but I wasn't sure if it was going to be a good show in the beginning. I think it took about an hour to an hour and a half to really start to move. The first half of that show was pretty by the book standard.
Whoomp, there it is.
That's right. You had R-Truth whooping on the pre-show. You had the primetime players retaining. You know, all this stuff going on. It wasn't really until even during the Bray Wyatt-Roman Reigns match... I was thinking to myself, if nothing special happens here, I don't know if this is a terribly memorable pay-per-view. And then something special happened.
Something huge happened.
Right. The Wyatts started to reform.
Oh.
That in the end of that match.
Sure.
Then your Divas thing.
I think everybody's opening to the even half or two-thirds of the Wyatts reforming.
Yeah, and Eric Rowan's injured, so you would think that he'll be back too.
Fine.
Right. Although I was laughing this week on Raw, they had, and I tweeted about it, and I believe it was retweeted by the WWE Universe, they had Luke Harper and Bray Wyatt versus Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose. And it was almost like, can we just admit we broke up these factions too early? Like, they're still, like, these are the teams we want to see. Now, Seth Rollins, of course, would be the exception to that because he's done so well on his own, but... As I was watching that, I was like, yeah, can't we just say we call a mulligan? We blew it. Maybe leave Seth Rollins out, but add a new Shield member or something and call it like it is. Some people were thinking that they should have Bo Dallas join the Wyatt family, which I think is to me, that's a little too on the nose. It's like, we get it. They're brothers. And I like Bo Dallas on his own anyway. And then add Sting to the Shield. I think people are just looking for a reason for Sting to be back.
And the Shield to be back.
And for the Shield to be back in some way, shape, or form. But I don't know how... Even the Divas Revolution is not bigger news than the fact that The Undertaker is back.
Huge.
That's the huge news. I'm assuming that's what you were getting at when you said huge. Not the Wyatt family reunion.
That's the way to make SummerSlam. I mean, obviously.
And it's SummerSlam was already sold out. Like, people were...
Yeah, but we needed that headline card. Like, that true headline
card.
Well,
you don't get more headline than Undertaker Brock Lesnar.
No, I think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm agreeing with you.
Yeah. What'd you think of the way the show ended, Battleground?
I thought it was the championship was a little bit overshadowed. I thought it was just kind of forgotten about.
And even now, as they're moving towards SummerSlam.
Which is looking like a Cena Rollins.
Right, and we'll get into that. But I still think the championship is being overshadowed because they said it. They said the main event for SummerSlam is Undertaker versus Brock Lesnar, which puts the championship match not in the main event, which has been done recently. It didn't used to be done, but I do think that the Undertaker... WWE is at such an interesting point because there are now superstars that legitimately overshadow the championship. You can make the argument that Brock Lesnar overshadows the championship, the world championship. Undertaker absolutely overshadows the world championship. Some could argue, and you saw it when CM Punk was the champion, that John Cena overshadows the world heavyweight championship. And I wonder, I personally don't think it damages the title, but I could see the argument that some people would make that it damages the title and the champion if you've got guys on the show that are bigger than the championship is.
I question if Bray Wyatt versus Taker at Mania was it was just a warm up?
It was almost like a plug in. And that's what I was also thinking that when I was watching Raw this week, that watching the Undertaker's talk, watching the backstage stuff between Brock and the Undertaker, which I think looked great.
Oh, may I say something about that? I like the style of where this is heading because right out the gate, there's no time for them to deliver soliloquies in ring to each other.
Right.
It is just an all-out brawl.
Right.
I feel like we've been missing that just like fuming madness.
Well, that's that thing in wrestling. It's like, well, we hate each other, so why are we talking?
Right.
And that's what this is. Undertaker comes out and he talks, but the minute Brock Lesnar's in that building, he's running to the ring and they got no words.
I like the style.
Hate each other. I hope.
I wish. Sorry.
Tell me. No, you tell me.
I wish Paul Bearer was still around.
He's dead.
Oh, I know, Sam.
Okay, I'm just saying he's not coming back. He will not be making a surprise appearance.
God rest
appearance.
His soul.
That's right.
But.
Oh, yes.
How amazing would that to see Heyman versus Bearer?
Right. I mean, Heyman and Bearer in separate corners.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah. Or even a tuxedo match between the two of them. I would say that,
Ooh, can we make this a coffin match?
Lesnar-Undertaker? Mm-hmm. I don't even think you need to. I don't think there's no stipulations are needed. Maybe no DQ, but there's no way this match will end in a DQ. I mean, Brooklyn will burn that stadium to the ground if the match ends in a DQ.
Brooklyn. You don't mess with us here.
No, no. But... Yeah, I think that watching The Undertaker in the ring, I realize this is the first time that we've really seen The Undertaker since the Brock Lesnar match. He disappeared from TV. Remember, he was not on TV at all for the build-up to the Bray Wyatt match. He showed up once, he won one match, and then he was gone again. So he was literally, he's been on TV for whatever it is, 25 minutes since the Lesnar thing. And you wonder, yeah, I think you're right. You wonder, in hindsight, does that have a purpose?
Was that a warm-up match? Just to see, like, if you know, still feel it out?
You mean behind the scenes?
I don't know.
I bet that it was. Bray Wyatt has a reputation of that I've heard. I don't know because I don't work there. But I've heard that Bray Wyatt is he's easy to work with. Like, people like working with him. Because he looks impressive, but he doesn't hurt people and blah, blah, blah. So he would be the ideal opponent to see, like, all right, we want to do a Brock Lesnar rematch. You know, last time Undertaker was in the ring with Brock Lesnar, he got a concussion within 3 minutes. So is Undertaker physically capable to do this rematch? Let's put him in there with Bray Wyatt and find out. And if we're going to put him in there with Bray Wyatt, we might as well do it at WrestleMania and make some money off the damn thing.
Does it hurt the value that he had that match?
I don't think so. No. Especially not after this one is being built. Like, people are frothing for this one. You heard the reaction. Even though, you're right, the match ended a little weird because there was no specific declaration of disqualification, the match is over. It was just like, well, the Undertaker's here.
It was like an awkward departing hug.
Right, like, forget this match even happened.
Yeah.
Right. It was like.
Cool.
I thought we were going in for a handshake, but I guess it's a hug. I'm happy you're here. That's how you felt about the Undertaker. Like, I'm happy you're here. I just didn't know we hug.
Yeah. Like, do the lights stay off?
Like, should we just
pound it out?
Fist bump. Oh, you're holding my fist now. Gripping my.
Yeah,
you should let go.
This is weird.
Yeah. Everything got strange.
Okay. Do we just make out?
Yeah. I guess that's.
Okay. Cool.
Okay. I'll just
good
lean
talk.
In.
Okay,
no,
good
I was
talk,
kidding.
Talk,
I was kidding.
Talk.
I was.
Yeah,
I didn't.
For sure. Mm-hmm.
No, me too. Yeah, there was some of that awkwardness. But all in all, I think it was good. And I don't think it takes away from Seth Rollins as the champion. If anything, the fact that he's kind of weaselly and weaseled his way out of the Brock Lesnar match adds to his reputation. I mean, that's his character. He weasels out of stuff. He needs J&J. He needs Kane. He needs outside interference, you know?
I feel like the Authority is still a few short.
Well, that brings us to, I mean, have we hit on everything with The Undertaker? It's just amazing that he's back.
Yeah, undeniably.
And yeah, I think actually you're probably right, and I hadn't even thought of that. I think the Bray Wyatt thing was probably a warm-up match for him to see if he still had it. And I like that he's in the ring talking now. I like that he and Brock Lesnar are brawling backstage, and I think it's going to be incredible. And regardless of the people who thought the match ended weird or whatever, you heard the reaction of that crowd when the lights went out and the gong hit.
Oh, forget it. Let's not overshadow how awesome it was.
Incredible.
There was just an awkward hug at the end.
There was a bit of an awkward hug. And like, it's like, well, I thought we were just friends. Well, I wanted more. You know what I mean? It was there. But yeah, so that leads us, I guess, into talking about what's going on with Seth Rollins now. And you're right, what you said earlier. I was watching Raw under the assumption that they will do a champion versus champion match between Seth Rollins and John Cena at SummerSlam. It was funny, as I was watching the John Cena-Kevin Owens match at Battleground, you remember a couple weeks ago I was saying, what is this, a best 2 out of 3, a rubber match, whatever it is. Like, how many matches between these two are we going to do? I found myself watching Battleground going, you know, I'd be okay if this was just a standard at pay-per-views now for the rest of the year. If they just had the John, like, part of watching a WWE pay-per-view is the John Cena-Kevin Owens match.
It's fantastic.
I could watch them till the end of time.
And I hate to kind of digress from the topic at hand here, which is Seth Rollins, but so what, no Kevin Owens at SummerSlam?
Well, that's what I was wondering. I was sitting there
What's
going
up?
Like...
That's an error.
And I wonder, too, and I hate to jump on this bandwagon because I think people do it too much, but there's this series of things where a new guy looks strong against Cena in the beginning, but at the end of the day, John Cena comes out victorious and hasn't really done anything for the young guy. Did it really do anything for Bray Wyatt to look strong against Cena if at the end of the day, Cena came out on top? Did it really do anything for Rusev to look strong against Cena if at the end of the day, Cena came out on top? Does it really do anything for Kevin Owens, as hot as he was coming in, getting that clean victory over Cena? Does that clean victory over Cena do anything for Owens now that Cena has, I guess, decisively beaten him and we're moving on, which I didn't expect?
I was a little disappointed there was a tap out.
Yeah, I mean, that it was as decisive as you can get. All talking can stop. Owens has nothing to say. Cena put him in the thing, and
I was
Kevin Owens
kind of
tapped
surprised.
Out. I was surprised, too. I was surprised, too. And there is a value to having a strong John Cena, but I think they kind
of... But in the words of Kevin Owens, we get it. We've seen you come out like this for 10 years. We get it. John Cena's a star.
Right.
Build somebody else.
And I think Cena is in this unique position where he can lose. He's finally at the point in his career where he can lose. He can lose championships. Cena could lose every match for the next 6 months and still come back looking strong easily.
How would you have played that out?
I mean, well, the question comes to mind then. The purpose of Cena being as strong as he is should only be that eventually somebody will be made to look stronger by beating him. Hence, Undertaker's streak only existed so Brock Lesnar could look stronger. Because before he beat the Undertaker's streak, Lesnar was not a force to be reckoned with. I mean, he was a special attraction because he didn't wrestle very often. But Lesnar was beaten by John Cena. He was beaten by Triple H. He was, you know, he had, people were beating Brock Lesnar on the reg. So when he won the, when he beat the Undertaker streak, that was the moment where it was like, we spent all this time building this streak. The streak's been broken because it's going to make Brock Lesnar look unstoppable, and it was effective. So John Cena, looking as strong as he does, one would assume that the only real purpose to it is to make somebody look strong. I thought that somebody was going to be Bray Wyatt. I didn't think it was going to be Rusev. But, you know, a year ago, I thought that was going to be Bray Wyatt. It wasn't Bray Wyatt. I really thought it was going to be Kevin Owens this time. And it wasn't.
So wait, we haven't answered the question yet. So we're not going to see Kevin Owens at SummerSlam.
Unless he ends up in something like, you know, the main event of Raw, they did the thing with the heels walking out on each other. Unless they do something where, like, him and Sheamus don't get along, or they put him in with Cesaro or something, which is a huge disappointment from the Cena thing, because the Cena thing was just so perfect.
So good.
So good.
I could have went with a best of 10 at this point.
As I said, put him on every pay-per-view. Stop counting matches. Every pay-per-view for the next year. For the remainder of 2015, they are each other's opponents, and they will battle until the end of time.
We're there.
I would be, yeah, I'd be excited every pay-per-view. All right, here comes my favorite part. It's like every pay-per-view. You got the Divas match, you got the title match, you got the Cena-Owens match.
Yeah, the Open Memorial.
Right, Wimbledon.
Wimbledon, something, but it's always going to be Kevin Owens.
It's always Kevin Owens, yeah. You know,
Open Memorial, Owens.
It's the exact opposite. You know how, like, Cena made it cool. And by the way, the Open Challenge was cool. Having somebody new come out every week on Raw. I mean, Stardust came out, and Sami Zayn came out, and Neville came out, and all this stuff. That was cool.
That was very cool.
And now do the complete opposite. Like, you never know who Cena's going to face. Okay, cool.
But
now,
it's Kevin Owens every time.
Now you always know who Cena's going to face, and it's always Kevin Owens. I would watch them all. They're all great. I never not enjoyed a Cena-Owens match.
Can we talk about Rusev?
Yeah.
What are they doing with Rusev, man?
He's got no shoes.
Not only does he have no shoes, his love life is lackluster.
Well, he's got Summer Rae. What do you mean lackluster?
He doesn't have any friends.
No, they walked out on him.
And you're right. He doesn't have any shoes. I feel like we should start a Kickstarter page, like a GoFundMe.
Right. Like the first goal is to get Rusev some shoes.
I feel kind of bad.
Then it's to get him some friends. And then the final goal is to get him a chick. But what about Summer Rae? That's his chick.
Yeah, but you know she's just a stand-in.
You think she's just a rebound?
Yeah, for sure.
That sucks for Summer.
Mm-hmm.
I like Summer.
We all do.
Right, but she's dressing like Lana.
She's got to do her.
Yeah.
Not Lana.
Right,
know?
You're right. Well, what about Lana? Like, do you think her and Ziggler is a thing?
I think her and Summer Rae is going to be a match.
Yeah, I would watch that match.
I bet Lana's sick in the ring. They give her a chance.
I don't know. We've never seen her. We've never seen her. I wonder if, I would like to see it. I think everybody would like to see it. Lana's one of the most popular divas in the division. I think everybody's very eager for a Lana match, but, you know, who knows?
She's one of the most popular divas just by talking.
Yeah, by not even having to do anything.
Good for you.
So, do you like Seth Rollins, John Cena? I think it's going to be a good match, but I don't like it like I like. I would rather see either Kevin Owens versus John Cena or Kevin Owens versus Seth Rollins, to tell you the truth.
I would rather see Jerry Lawler versus Doink the Clown.
No.
I would.
Wow. Now, yeah. Is that to say that you don't want to see Cena Rollins, or is that to say you love Lawler and Doink?
No, I'm not even sure.
Yeah, you just want to see the fucking Doink match.
Yeah, exactly. I get it.
So you're not really
I'm not that excited for it.
You're
I got to
be
honest.
Well, you weren't excited about Rollins-Lesnar.
No, because I feel like we all knew something was going to happen with
right.
that.
There's going to be some chicanery because Rollins isn't losing the title, but he's not getting a clean fall over Lesnar.
No, not a chance.
No.
So there was some excitement that came with that.
So what if they do – what are they going to do? Title for title where both championships are on the line?
I think that would be a great idea.
Yeah. And to me – Seth Rollins has to beat John Cena. He has to. He has to. I mean, here's the only thing.
I just feel a little John Cena played out, man.
Here's the only thing I could see. And if you remember, I've fantasy booked my way out of the
Do it.
Kevin Owens Finn Balor, John Cena, and it didn't go at all my way. At all. Not even close.
You could just say it did. No one would know. They're not going to go back. I got a backlog.
Look, I had John Cena winning the NXT championship, okay? My ideas are sometimes...
Man, that was a really stupid idea.
It wasn't stupid. It was just a little far out.
Really,
I'm
really
a creative
dumb.
Person.
Well, sometimes your creativity sucks.
It doesn't suck. People would be behind that. Anywho...
you did have John Cena
as the NXT champion. Yes, and then he loses it at Full Sail. That's huge. So...
and it's not taped. It's not even a house show.
Listen...
Yeah. It's Cocoa Springs. Yeah, is that even the name of the town?
Cocoa Springs, Florida.
It's in Venice.
Yeah. And he's losing it to Salmon Crow. Listen. And I think he should anyway. Here's my new thing.
This ought to be good.
I would say it depends on really what you want to do. And if you're still attached to the idea of Roman Reigns being your guy going forward, what you can do is put the title on John Cena. He beats Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins gets a rematch. He beats him again.
Where?
Well, I don't know. Next pay-per-view.
Okay.
Everybody is fed up with John Cena. Everybody's drinking that Katie Lindendahl Haterade.
I don't drink the Haterade.
Sometimes you do.
I just sip it.
And yeah.
It's really an Ecto cooler.
And Roman Reigns becomes...
Squeeze it.
It's a cool burst. Roman Reigns.
It's like a free sun.
Roman Reigns becomes the opponent for John Cena. Now... You've got people who want Roman Reigns to win because the alternative is John Cena. So maybe you just created a scenario where Roman Reigns can realistically be your guy because he's beating John Cena. Where do you stand on that, Lindendahl?
I just kind of spaced out because none of this excites me.
You're fucking thinking about juice.
I was thinking about juice. I'm also thinking about, sorry, sidebar. I saved my cheat day and my off day just for you, Sam.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hot eats, cool treats. So I'm hungry.
I'm hungry too. We have to focus on the task at hand.
But I want the Blizzard of the Month.
I know you do.
I'm not excited about putting John Cena in the spotlight. It's just been done over and over. And that's, I think, why I was so excited when Kevin Owens said, just come out here. You've done the same thing for 10 years. We get it. And I was like, slow clap.
Right. See, that's why I always get like...
Slow clap. Are you going to do a New Day? You just... All right.
That's why I think I'm naive. Because I always go like, it's okay. I know everybody's fed up with John Cena. But let's put him in the spot and then see where it goes. And then it's always like, no, this is it. John Cena's just the guy now. You're like, oh, it doesn't go anywhere? That's just... John Cena's just the guy? And they're like, yeah.
I will say that I do like that he's put a little bit more clout on the United States Championship.
But now what are you doing with it? Now you're going to make it so that it's stuck in the main event. It's stuck in the world title match?
Like, I don't know.
Like, it had clout on it when it would... So that's why Kevin Owens should be the United States champion.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Can you dig that?
Sucker.
All right, let's get into the Divas.
Oh, gosh.
I have had a very exciting last few days.
You sure have.
Love seeing... Everybody knows... Love those NXT divas. One in particular.
Sasha Banks.
Whatever. Not mentioning any names.
The boss.
I think they've been doing incredible. And you know what's crazy? You look at the ring. And when they first came out last week. When they, at the pay-per-view, at Battleground. They're all in the ring together. Brie, Charlotte, Sasha. Charlotte and Sasha are the NXT divas. These are the quote-unquote developmental divas. And as much as I'm all about Brie Mode, love me the Bellas.
Oh, baby, here it comes. Finally!
You know I love the Bellas. But you're looking at that ring going, I don't know if Brie belongs in that ring.
Someone's a third wheel.
Right.
And for once, it's not me.
Look, Sasha and I get along, okay? Yeah, I was looking at there going like, whoa.
I mean.
Like, I don't, like, I would.
Very, very obvious.
Yeah. And you kind of go, I don't know who on the main roster. I mean, we were talking about it last week a little bit. But now you really see it. And you're like, I don't even know. I don't know if Brie belongs in this match.
You've hit this reality.
Yeah.
I guess the Brie Mode shirt's retired.
No, the Brie Mode shirt's not retired. I stay in Brie Mode.
All right.
I still get excited when I hear Brie Mode.
I think Paige and Naomi and Tamina, as I've said previously, fit in.
Right.
And I don't like the words fit in any scenario.
Right, because you're
can match like pound for pound.
Well, maybe the Bellas are the outliers.
Here's what I also found weird.
Tell me.
One, putting them on commentary. Two, putting them on commentary and keeping it so vague. Like if I were them and in a boat where, all right, maybe my skills don't match up, right? I'm gonna substitute for something that is better.
Right.
I'm gonna go haterade on them.
Right.
I'm going to make this a rivalry. I'm going to be like, no, we've been here. This is our house.
Just start taking shots.
Take the shots. Don't say competition is a good thing and we're really great and competition is only going to make us better. It was too cheesy.
Yeah, I wonder how much
just
of that.
Just own it.
Yes. Like, I want to
own this rivalry and fill in where your weak spots are.
Become Donald Trump. Like, just
yes.
Start taking shots.
Take shots.
But you wonder if part of that is maybe an initiative by WWE to not have the women bullying each other.
But, I mean, they're putting such a spotlight on this divide of how now divas are divas in the sense that they can, like, kick ass in the ring.
Right.
Let it go.
And by the way,
let it go and just make a rivalry out of it.
They should go even further with the divas thing and say, like, NXT, Sasha Banks is the NXT women's champion, not the NXT divas champion. They should not be calling the NXT ladies divas. Those should be the women from NXT, the divas from WWE. That should be part of the thing.
Oh, I agree with that.
Like, create some separation there. Because eventually, divas is kind of a diminutive name. Eventually, it should be the women's division, not the divas division.
Absolutely.
Like, you don't call it the... I mean, you could say, like, they're divas the way you might say they're superstars. But you don't describe gender by saying superstar.
Well, I just think that has a weird connotation that comes with it, too.
What?
Diva.
Yeah.
It's just, eh.
Right. It's like, hey, head bitch in charge. And you're like, relax. You know? Relax. What kind of diva are you? Donna Summer.
I almost felt like you.
Donna Summer.
Donna. Peanut butter jelly time. I feel like there was a moment, too, where you're just, you could almost feel that Sasha and Charlotte, at one point, just wanted to wrestle each other. And it was just like, just kind of back out of the ring.
I thought, you're like, Brie, this is the match we know how to do. And
oh,
this is
my gosh.
This is the one they want to see. I was really impressed on Raw because the bank statement as a move looks like a move that's so easy to screw up because you just have to kind of twist yourself around and be in the right position.
Yeah.
She was flawless, to borrow a term. She was flawless, Sasha Banks was, when she put the bank statement on Raw. The bank statement that was put down on Raw, I think she, what'd she do on Paige? Whoever it was, she did it flawlessly.
I'll tell you what didn't happen flawlessly. Is
what?
Paige's paid time off.
It's not what it is. PTO does not stand
it's
for
paid time off.
Is that what it is?
She did not nail it.
My gosh.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Katie. Well, you got anything else that you want to hit before we go?
Wow. Time's up?
Yeah. I mean, look at the time.
I feel like we should give out some barbecue sauce.
You want to give out more prizes?
Yeah, let's give out some prizes.
All right, but
I'm hungry and I'm thinking about food.
Well, maybe we should save the prizes because you're going to be in Hong Kong
and the
Philippines,
Mensa.
And Malaysia.
Come on, let's give out some prizes.
But then I'm going to have to deal with it while you're in another country.
That's too bad. We'll give out one full set of barbecue sauce and then but you have to. Here's the deal. Oh, this is good. I just made this up.
All right.
We haven't blown up Tatanka's Twitter account in a while.
Uh-huh.
So you have to use a hashtag and blow up Tatanka's Twitter account. And tag myself and Sam. You got to finish it here for me. Using they have to say something to Tatanka.
Yeah, how about hashtag Tatanka loves barbecue? BBQ.
Yeah, just make it real random.
Tatanka loves BBQ. Hashtag it. We'll send somebody some JR's barbecue sauce.
Done.
Katie Linendahl, thanks for stopping by.
Good times.
I'll talk to you later.
Chowski.
Thanks for listening. Follow at Not Sam on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And subscribe for free to listen every week to Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast.
Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G. Because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters. The more your network matters. The more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network. Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of three mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.